Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levypayers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
According to the most recent DEFRA Farm Practices Survey, only 20% of beef cattle holdings in England use stock bulls with high estimated breeding values, otherwise known as EBVs. And I don't know what you think, but this seems like a huge opportunity for the sector. Hi, I'm Sam Charlton, Head of Engagement for Beef and Lamb at HDB. And in this episode of the Food and Farming podcast, the focus is on genetics and its use within the English suckler herd. What you're about to hear is a conversation between my colleague Sarah Penrose and our resident genetics expert, Dr. Harriet Bunning, and Cumbrian suckler beef farmer James Dixon. Sarah begins by asking Harriet what we mean when we refer to genetics.
Everyone in the beef industry would agree that genetics of our cattle is really important. But when people say genetics, I don't know that they always mean the same thing, you know? So I think often when people talk about genetics, what they really mean is breed and just picking the right breed. And obviously that's really important. It depends on your system, which breed you think is going to be the best match for your farm. But they think they pick the breed, they've made the choice, they keep those cattle, and then they're done with genetics. But that's just missing so much of what's there. And I think the really amazing thing about breeding genetics is it's not something you do once. You like build on it year after year, and that means you can keep making progress. So I guess when I'm talking about genetics, I'm not talking about picking the right breed at all, really. I'm talking about picking the right animals within whatever breed you want to use. That's something that some people do by eye. They look at an animal, you look at a bull in a ring. If you're interested in carcass weights, you could probably tell quite a lot about his genetics from carcass weight just by looking at him. But if you're looking at changing other things other than just carcass weights, I think that's much harder to do by eye. And that's when there's a lot of tools out there that we can use to better understand the genetics of our animals. And that's really where EBVs come in.
You know, I hate to compare us against like dairy beef or international, but What are they doing in terms of genetics, and why are we kind of missing out?
So if we look at dairy farmers and we're interested in their kind of milk production stuff, they have really similar tools out there. So at AHDB, there's the dairy genetic evaluations, and they produce this index that just measures the genetic potential of dairy cows to be a good dairy cow. And I think in their survey, 94% of them said that they used PLI at least some of the time in their breeding choices, which is just, that's amazingly different to the results we see from the beef survey.
And by doing that, have they seen real improvements then in a lot of the traits?
When you look at the rate of improvements in the dairy industry, it's just huge. I think it's fair to say that they made some mistakes in the past, and it's really good because when we can learn from those.
Yeah.
So just choosing one trait to breed from is not always the best way to go. But in terms of the modern approach, where they're breeding for all of the different traits that are important all at once, they see such huge improvements. So I think when I had a look and had a chat with some of my dairy colleagues, they said that if you take just the average... And this is like an AI sire. So these are a good quality dairy bulls, just the average bull from 15 years ago. He would be off the bottom of the list in terms of if we measured his genetic potential compared to the bulls available today. So the rate of improvement is just huge in the dairy industry. And I think we're just not seeing that in beef.
We're not. And is that just because we're not using genetics, we're not using the EBVs, so we can't possibly improve them because we're just not selecting for it?
Yeah, and I don't think it's not all beef farmers, but I think it is the average beef farmer. To be fair, I think dairy is really different. The way that you get data in dairy, the way that you can see the milk in the tank at the end of every day is very different to the beef, especially if we're just sticking some cattle out on a field. You're not weighing them every day, if you weigh them at all. So you just don't see that benefit. And there's also the kind of fragmented nature of the beef sector that just means that even some the people making the breeding decisions aren't always the people that see the benefits of them. So it just makes it that much harder. But yeah, I think there's still huge potential in the beef industry. So particularly it's the huge diversity we have that makes it difficult.
Yeah.
But also means that we have huge opportunity. There's such genetic diversity, and that's so important when it comes to breeding.
You've done some really good number crunching looking at sire use in kind of the dairy industry, where we're breeding beef calves and compared those beef bulls against the suckler, the bulls that the suckler industry are using. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what you found with that? Because it's so interesting.
Yeah, so at AHDB, I look after our national beef evaluations. And unlike a lot of the other different sources of genetic information in terms of like breed societies or breeding companies, the National Beef Evaluations is unique within the UK because we measure EBVs, so that's genetic potential, of all cattle, be that pedigree, different breeds, crossbred, and we also use an awful lot of dairy beef data. And so that means that we provide some really useful tools for farmers. But as well, it means that we can really track change over time. And I think that's what I was particularly interested in, seeing, yeah. Okay, what is the progress we're actually making? And I think when we look at a lot of the traits, it is a good news story. So that's great. So I think if I just pull out days to slaughter, on average, suckler calves born, say, in 2021, that's when we have good information. Animals a bit more recent, we don't have as accurate information on. So let's go back to 2021. They do have the potential to finish much earlier than animals born, say, 20 years ago. If we're talking about actual numbers, I think for natives, the improvement is about 15 days. And for continentals, it's about 10 days. So that means we're making progress. We are breeding cattle which have the potential to finish that much more quickly. But I think what was really interesting is when I looked at that potential in dairy beef calves. So when I say dairy beef, that's they're out of a dairy yeah. cow and by yeah. a beef sire. And back in 2001, the genetic potential of these animals was much poorer than their suckler counterparts. That's because they're inheriting half of their genetics from their dairy mother. And she understandably yeah. doesn't have good beef genetics. You wouldn't want a dairy cow with good beef genetics necessarily. But we see over time that the rate of improvement in these calves is just so, so huge. That if we look at today, or at least calves born in 2021, mm-hmm. They actually have better genetic potential than their suckler counterparts, both native and continental sired. And I think that's really interesting. That's not because there's a change in our dairy herd. Their mothers haven't changed. It's their beef sires that have got so much better. And I think it could be potentially really worrying for the suckler industry. We've sort of relied on the fact that our calves should have really good beef genetics from both sides, and that should give us an advantage. But if we're not making the most out of that genetics, then we're going to lose out to the dairy beef industry.
And do you think AI has some influence on these figures as well? You know, in the dairy and most of those beef sires, AI sires, whereas in the suckler industry, you're less likely to bother with AI. You're much more likely just to have a stock bull.
Yes, exactly. And so I think what's interesting is that the vast majority of the sires, the bulls, fathers of these dairy beef calves are owned by breeding companies. And what's interesting is that I don't think we can say that your average dairy farmer is choosing a bull who will produce faster growing calves. I don't think that is in the selection decisions. I mean, it would make a whole lot more sense for those dairy farmers to be looking at things like calving ease or gestation length to try and maximize the productivity of their dairy cows. So that means I think it's not the dairy farmers that are making these decisions, but the breeding companies.
Yeah.
And what's really different about the breeding companies is the amount of data that they have available to them, the fact that they'll be using EBVs to choose which bulls to even collect from in the first place. So it's not that the dairy farmers are choosing the best beef genetics, it's that the AI companies are only providing to them the best beef genetics. And it really highlights the potential that the whole industry could be making if we made use of this data.
So you touched on the National Beef Evaluations just a little bit earlier. Can you just remind us what that is and where that data is coming from?
Yeah, so National Beef Evaluations are run by AHDB. And unlike, for example, breed society genetic evaluations, they're not based on performance recording. So they're not based on data that's being submitted by individual breeders. We only really use national data sets. So when I say national data sets, that's things like BCMS, which is just an amazing resource when we're looking at like calving records. If we're interested in longevity, survival, fertility, there's a whole lot of information in there. And then in terms of carcass traits, we get large amounts of data from most of the big processors and abattoirs across the UK. And that means we get information about the carcass weight, the Europe score, and things like, well, days to slaughter. So yeah, we know how old the animal was when it was killed. From all of that, we're producing these EBVs that are available for theoretically any animal across the UK, any bovine across the UK, be it pedigree, crossbred, or dairy beef.
What trends are we seeing between when we look at the suckler performance against the dairy beef? Like what are those graphs showing us?
The genetic potential for these traits that we're interested in, days to slaughter, carcass weight, yeah, Europe score, we're not seeing a big difference now between dairy beef calves and suckler calves.
Okay.
And that's because the genetic merit of the AI sires used to produce dairy beef is that much better. The rate of improvement is so much greater. I think it's fair to say that if the suckler industry doesn't change, we'll probably see that the dairy beef calves have greater genetic potential. I think it's worth highlighting that this is on average across the whole industry. There will be some suckler farmers who are making much better progress.
But I think it's definitely a wake-up call for the suckler industry that we need to start using this information, or we are going to be left behind. So, Harriet, when I'm out with farmers, one of the things that always comes up and they always ask me is, can EBVs be fudged by pedigree breeders?
I think that's a really good question. I get it a lot as well. I think it makes sense, right? I mean, you're asking the person selling you the bull, and of course, he's going to say that that bull's the best bull. Like, I completely understand where this is coming from. But there's sort of two key things I think it's really important for people to understand. Firstly, we, in the all of that complicated analysis that goes behind producing EBVs, one of the things that gets corrected for is the farm that the animal has been on. And that means that if one farmer is making all of their figures look that much better, it'll all be corrected back down again in the analysis. So if people are systematically fudging figures, the way that the maths works that underlies EBVs will mean that the EBVs will be corrected back down again. I think the other key thing is, if this is something that people are worried about, I'd really recommend that they look at the national beef evaluations, just because we're not relying on performance recorded data. We're getting data from abattoirs, we're getting data from BCMS. Mm. And that means that we're not relying at all on what that individual farmer says. So if you're interested, you can see how the Breed Society evaluations and the National Beef evaluations tie up, and they usually do.
Brilliant. And is this where you'd look at accuracies as well? I know they're often there on the chart, but do you just want to explain what they mean and where you can find them and whatnot?
Yeah, so alongside every EBV, you should get an accuracy, and it's usually a percentage, so anywhere between 0 and 100%. I think it's worth saying that normally we only publish things that are over a certain threshold, so like in national beef with carcass traits, if it's less than 30% accuracy, we don't publish it because we know that it's not very accurate, it's not likely to be true. The general way that I look at it is, the closer to 100% it is, the less likely it is to change. So a lot of the AI size, for example, that we get huge amounts of data for, you'll see accuracies of like 99%. And that usually means even if we get loads more data, you're not going to see the number change on the chart. But if we've got an accuracy of, say, 40%, that basically means we don't have that much data yet. And as more data gets in, you might see that the EBV moves slightly one way or another. I think the most important thing in terms of accuracies and EBVs is to understand that it's not like 50%. Is the boundary, 0% is the boundary. So anytime we have an accuracy above 0%, then it's better than a random guess. So even if you've got EBVs where the accuracy is only 35%, it's still actually better than no information at all.
So with that in mind, then we have, you know, we have the genetic information, we have the EBVs, they're there. Why is it there? And More often than not, that bull's genetic information is published in the sales catalogue. Why is it that it's often some of the bulls with some of the poorest EBVs that make the most money at some of these sales? What is going on?
I think this is a really interesting one. And like, I'm not here to say that this doesn't happen. It definitely happens. If we go to the big bull sales, it's the show ring results that determine the price as much as what's on its chart in terms of EBVs. And I think it's interesting. You want a lot of things from your stock bull that it's really difficult to measure in the show ring, right? In terms of fertility or like feed efficiency or all of these kind of traits. How do you measure that from the show ring? And it's also, I think, the way that those bulls going in the show ring have been raised and grown. It's fair to say that's not how you treat your average calf, you know? So it's not even like it's a good measure of how that animal's going to perform in your system in terms of what he looks like in the show ring. But I guess, I don't know, when it comes down to it, I think it would be naive of us to say that show ring results aren't important to some people, particularly like the pedigree guys. If you've got a really showy bull who looks amazing in the ring, it probably is worth paying more for him because his sons hopefully will also look really nice in the show ring. And so you can recoup some of that money that you've spent. But I think, so really to make a change in terms of this, I think the whole industry needs to start looking at EBVs and start valuing traits beyond just what an animal looks like in the show ring.
Yeah.
Because it's not just carcass weight that determines how much profit you make on your farm. There's so many efficiency improvements we could make if we looked at other traits that you just can't measure in a show ring.
That's a really important point, Harry, and it's something that I am seeing is if more and more commercial suckler farmers are looking for bulls from grass-based systems. So you know they're not going to go to nothing once you get them home. And I suppose that's my next quite challenging question is, are EBVs actually suitable for grass-based systems?
I think the general, when we kind of look at the results of some different kind of scientific studies and that kind of thing, if we're looking at an individual trait, animals that grow the quickest in the shed are usually the same animals that grow the quickest out at pasture. So in terms of like the ranking of the genetics, it doesn't move around that much. I think the key difference really is the traits that you're interested in. So if you are kind of a more intense system, maybe fertility isn't as important to you as it would be in a pasture system where you really want to make the most out of that spring grass.
Yeah.
So I think the key difference really is the traits that you look at. The EBVs themselves should still give you a good idea of the genetic potential.
So just on that point, obviously we've touched on traits and EBVs. What's the difference, Harriet?
So EBV, it stands for estimated breeding value. Oh. And I think estimated is really important because we're estimating something here. So this isn't us truly measuring. It's we're getting an idea from all the data that we have on the genetic potential of an animal. And when I say genetic potential, that's where the trait comes in, because it's not the overall genetic potential, however you measure that for an animal. It's for a specific trait. So I've talked about days to slaughter. So we have an EBV for days to slaughter. That's one trait. But then there's loads of other traits, and they're just things that you think are important for your cattle. So things like calf survival or calving ease is a really important trait. There's lots of different traits. In national beef evaluations, we currently have 8, which are carcass weight, days to slaughter, Europe fatten conformation, carcass growth, and then 3 maternal traits alongside that.
Well remembered. It's not easy when you put on the spot. And just while we're on the terminology within genetics, just remind us what indexes are.
So an index is a way that you don't just select for one trait at once. That's really important. If you just chase a single thing, you're going to end up with everything else dropping. So we don't just breed for one thing at once. We breed for cattle that work the best overall. And an index is basically a way to measure the merit for lots of different traits at once. And with an index, it'll say, well, this trait is particularly important, this trait is a bit less important, and it has relative weights.
That's HDB's Dr. Harriet Bunning answering questions on the accuracy of beef EBVs. Harriet was speaking to my colleague Sarah Penrose, who's the Senior Engagement Manager within the Beef and Lamb team, as part of this episode of the Food and Farming Podcast. So let's turn our attention away from some of the theory and focus on the practical side of things with suckler beef farmer James Dixon. Sarah asks James to explain how he uses genetics in his herd.
We have just around about 200 suckler cows, stabilisers, mostly pedigrees now and pure and some grading up. We've been in the stabilisers now towards 20 years and basically use EBVs in our selection process all along, really. Initially, maybe was a bit sceptical about EBVs, but I've basically learned to trust them.
What influence do you think they've had on your herd? I mean, obviously, you've been, like you say, with stabilisers 20 years, so there's a lot of change there. What have you seen by focusing on genetics?
I think what we've done is we've got all our cattle into a lot tighter band. Whilst lifting the whole profile at the same time, we've got to manage to get them in a tighter band and basically very similar.
Do you tend to focus more on the terminal side, so like your age at slaughter and that sort of thing, or is it your maternal traits that you tend to look at?
Probably lately it's been maternal, because our market is, we like to sell breeding females in calf, heifers or cows.
Yeah.
And so we've got to keep that side of it. If that's what you're selling, that's what you, where you need the emphasis a bit. But also on the other side, we're also selling bulls as well. And when jaw blocks comes in the yard, some of them are looking for more maternal, some are looking more finisher side. It's kind of have a broad spread of most things for most people, if you can.
How do you source your herd sires?
Over the years, we've only bought two or three bulls since we started, but we've been putting embryos in from out of the States. We put 10 or a dozen in each year, and they're sort of sourced to produce our stock bulls and a few replacement heifers as well.
And why embryos then?
The stabilisers, that's the only way to get new blood in, because we can't import semen out of the States.
Oh.
Embryos, and the better stuff are the newer bloodlines are over there.
I bet that's a complicated process to get them across here.
Well, we don't actually do that. It's the stabiliser company do that, but I think it's been a bit nightmare once or twice.
I can imagine it's not the easiest thing to do. So it was interesting because we had a chat, didn't we, last week about the questions I was going to ask you on the podcast and whatnot. One of the things that you said was about your neighbours used to laugh at you for what you were doing by focusing on genetics. And I think that is quite a big thing that a lot of suckler producers actually face. Have they stopped that now they've seen how far you've come?
Yeah, they've stopped laughing now, and some are showing interest in what we're doing. They still have the mentality of wanting that back end in a calf and not really bothered about the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's not the be all and end all.
That's it. It's your profitability, isn't it? It's not your production. And I think that's something I've been trying to get my head around recently as well. And I know Harriet's really touched on the theory of, you know, indexes, traits, EBVs, which can sound very complicated. When you're looking at a chart, James, and deciding which bull to use, how do you actually select him?
I know what we've got in our herd and where we're light and where we need to improve, really. And that's the starting point. And then try basically to sort that out using EBVs. But I don't, like Harriet said, you wouldn't just go for one EBV on its own. It's no good trying to get your finisher index high and abandon everything else out. I like to see one with a balanced EBV, and I do use the graph quite a lot, which is basically a graph and says whether it's in the top 10% or the bottom 10%. And I try to use bulls that have got as many on the right-hand side as in positive, the negative effectively.
Brilliant. And I think that's a really good top tip, is if you're finding you don't know how on earth to choose a bull, you want everything at the right-hand side of the chart. And Harriet, does every breed society have that chart?
Yeah, all of your big beef breeds have them. A large amount of them use the breed plan system from ABRI, and you just search it through the Breed Society website. Limousins have their own Taurus database, but it works in a really similar way.
So Harriet, just remind us how we can access EBVs or genetic information for bulls, for any bull, any pedigree bull, even if we're going to buy them privately. Where can we go to get this?
So you're right, in a sale, often the sales catalogue will have that chart for you already. You can see that same chart on pretty much every Breed Society website. If you go through the website, you can search the animal on the database and it will pull up the EBV chart, and you'll have information about individual EBVs and index values for that breed. I think if you're looking for other information in other places, there's also, if you're buying AI from a breeding company, you might well get some information from them in their semen catalogue. I think the kind of key thing is, if you want one place that you can go to look up any animal, the National Beef Evaluations that we produce will give you that. You can go to our website. If you just search AHDB National Beef Evaluations, click through, you can search with an ear tag or with a pedigree name for most breeds, and it will bring up the chart for the National Beef Evaluations traits. You can also access this by clicking through from most Breed Society websites.
And you touched there on, you know, the genetic information that is in beef breeding catalogues. Often it looks quite different to what you would see on the website, on a Beef Society website, basically. How are they calculating that information versus what you can see on the Breed Society website, if that makes sense?
I think, to be honest, we could do a whole podcast on just using breeding company information, because there's a whole lot of different ways that that information is provided to you. I think a key thing probably is that most of it is geared towards a dairy farmer who's looking for a beef bull. So the key traits they'll be really focusing on are calving ease and gestation. And then the value of the calf kind of comes after that.
Yes.
And I think, yeah, there's lots of different ways they display that information. Sometimes it's EBVs, it's genetics that underpins it. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just the average of what the calves are like. So I'm afraid I can't really give you a nice, easy answer to that one. There's a lot of different ways that the breeding companies give you that information.
So it's still worthwhile then going onto that Breed Society page and having a look, or having a look at the National Beef Evaluations as well. And like you say, the National Beef Evaluations, the brilliant thing about it is it allows you to compare bulls of two different breeds.
Yeah, and it's really the only way to do that in the UK, because all of our other evaluations are within breed. If you're not interested in a specific breed and you just are a commercial suckler farmer and you want to, you just know you want a native bull, for example, you can look up a Hereford, an Angus, a stabiliser, and you can actually compare between the charts. But you can't do that if you're using information from the breed societies, because the graphs just aren't on the same scale. So if you want to compare different breeds, National Beef Evaluation is the only way to do it.
And you need the bull's ear tag to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So I would either do the ear tag. If you have a pedigree name and they're registered in the Breed Society, you can sometimes find them using that. But if that doesn't work, it's worth sticking the ear tag in as well.
Thank you. So that's a relatively simple way to go and access the genetic information for a bull that you are looking at. Thank you. Genomics. They seem to be becoming increasingly popular, particularly in the dairy herd. Do you think this will be available within the beef herd soon?
Well, I mean, we're already there for some breeds. So just to give you a bit of background, genomics is where, rather than just getting information on the pedigree of the animal and how it does for all the different traits, we add in that little bit of extra data, which is actually looking at what's going on inside the DNA. And that means we can hopefully, with that extra bit of information, make better breeding decisions. In terms of dairy, genomics has made a huge impact. You talk to my dairy colleagues at AHDB, they'll say that the rate of genetic improvement, to the progress that's actually being made, has doubled since they've started using genomics, which is just amazing. So there's huge potential to start using it. But at the moment, I think in terms of the breeds, only Limousins and Stabilisers in the UK are widely using genomics. Some of the other breeds have just started implementing it, the likes of South Devons, and I believe Angus and Shorthorn possibly starting as well.
And why is that then? Why isn't it available across all breeds? What's the issue there?
I think a lot of it is kind of infrastructure and just starting to routinely collect this information. So when I talk about genetic information and measuring the DNA, you might also have heard the term genotype, but it's basically actually just measuring exactly what's happening in the DNA rather than guessing. A lot of people do DNA testing their cattle for things like parentage, or maybe they're interested in myostatin or POLD, those kind of things that are just very simple genetic traits. But we can use that information to do so much more. And I think more people are waking up to that.
Because you do have to do a DNA sample, don't you, for most pedigree bulls. So you're doing it anyway. It would be good if you could then take it a bit further.
Yes, exactly.
And how expensive is it? Like, genomics sounds very technological and quite expensive. What sort of cost are you looking at, do you know?
The main cost is still the DNA sample. And as you say, usually you have to do that anyway for a lot of your pedigree breeds. I had a little look. I looked on the Limousin website, and at the moment, for £30 plus VAT, you DNA test your bull, and from that you get genomic breeding values, or GEBVs. I don't know if James can answer for Stabilisers.
I think it's a little bit less than that, but I couldn't put an exact figure on it. It's between 20 and 30, I think, because we do all the heifers and any bulls that we're breeding, so we just do the lot that are going to be breeding.
Ah, brilliant. And do you use it as a selection tool then, if they don't? Like, how do you use that information, James?
Well, it backs up what we're already doing, that you can get, and it does alter indexes, some of them quite dramatically, actually. You think that they've got good indexes, and you do the genomic stuff, and then all of a sudden it's not quite as good, or it's gone even better. The idea being that they do the genomics that way so that we can get to where the answer of the index is going to be a lot faster. Because it's supposedly equal to about 40 daughters or of a bull records going into the system. The genomics just speeds it up.
And you use that information, like you say, to decide which heifers to breed, you know, to retain or to sell or to breed from. Like, how do you use it?
We get as much data and detail as we can and then decide what we're doing, effectively. Yeah. But having said that, we don't just breed for EBVs alone. They've got to look the part as well. It's not, you know, the gospel. Every EBV is just not everything.
No, one farmer told me, you've still got to look at them for 10 years, you know, if they're a cow, you've still got to like the look of them. So, like we say, it's just another tool, isn't it, in the toolbox?
And that's where we leave the chat between Sarah Penrose, Dr. Harriet Bunning, and Cumbrian suckler beef farmer James Dixon. As Harriet mentioned, you can access the National Beef Evaluations through our website, www.hdb.org.uk, where there is also a huge amount of useful information on all things genetics. I'm Sam Charlton, Head of Engagement for Beef and Lamb at HDB. My thanks go to Sarah, Harriet and James, and of course to all of you for listening to this episode of the Food and Farming Podcast.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.